you know, it was a good, not great speech. It depends really whether one's talking aesthetically. And I suppose, you know, it was very aggressively not into lofty flights of prose poetry. But that was precisely because the mood was so dark. I think what the target, possibly even subconsciously in his mind, was not so much George Bush, although there was a lot of, you know, a lot of talk about needing to restore America from what had been done over the past few years. But the real target, I think, was Ronald Reagan. This was about as much of a not mourning in America speech as you could imagine. There was a sort of sense of philosophical austerity about it that did not want to sugar the pill, did not want to indulge in fake sunshine. It may be that, you know, the problem with the speech, and it was a problem, I think, was that he overcorrected so much. It wasn't, I didn't care at all about it not sounding like JFK or Abraham Lincoln in terms of the cadences and the fanciness of the prose. I thought it was completely right for the moment to really lower the voltage on flights of rhetoric. What I think he could have done was just love up the audience a bit more. And, you know, get I'm sure everybody said there was actually no point really at which he kind of lifted the crowd up and got roars of applause. There was maybe one when he talked about being tough on terrorists and so on, that we will defeat you. But, on, you know, it's something he does very, very well, but sort of almost chose not to do. There were certainly positive moments of exhortation. I loved the bit where he said, well, we are basically the same people that we were a year ago, even while so much has changed. We still work, we still manufacture things. We've come unraveled because of the irresponsibility or thoughtlessness or chaos of a certain number of people, something like that. But he didn't actually make sure to say that somehow it was all our fault as well, that we've not been strenuous enough in defending economic integrity and making sure the world goes round and so on. So it was very schoolmasterly in that way. And there was a sort of, it was such an exercise in tough love. It so denied the chance to wallow a little bit in the specialness of the moment, that it did strike me as excessively chilly, I thought, actually. That was my problem.
What did you think of the way Obama invoked America's history to inspire future courage?
Yeah, well, I've made a series that presupposes that's a good thing to do. So, of course, that was fantastic. It was odd that he didn't make more of, you know, Martin Luther King wasn't even mentioned. I know he's done it a million times, and he did it at the public concert. But it was odd that he didn't allow the African-Americans and many other Americans just to relish a little more than one cursory reference to what he called the dream that began on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial and ended here. No, he does, you know, for him, America is history. I mean, he personifies it. It's in his wiring. It was fantastic, I thought, that he ended with Washington. I mean, that was a huge surprise, and for those in the know, it was very movingly powerful because Washington was the president, of course, who freed his slaves on his death. He had more of a stricken conscience about it than did Jefferson. And also, Washington is so damn white, you know, really, I thought to myself. But it was a wintry image again. You can either say, as I do on the whole, that there was a brilliant twinning together of the absolutely bloody freezing temperature, the kind of winter of our discontent moment which America's going through, and Washington being, you know, stuck on the ice floes of the Delaware River, and the soldiers shivering at Valley Forge. I mean, I don't know whose idea that was, but that was rather brilliant. But Washington too did have this. Washington wasn't one for cuddling the audience particularly either, I have to say, in the Lincoln way. So it was an amazing, what was brilliant about that actually was you got the whole arc really of American history from its absolute beginnings, indeed before its beginnings, you know, in the Revolutionary War, to now. And that was the kind of conceptual panorama that he is really astonishingly good at. So I found that very moving and very powerful and extremely unexpected. I tell you, I talked to a lot of people in the crowd. You couldn't not, because it took about 2 hours to get away from it to any form of warmth and the subway and so on. And I'll tell you, and people in the Guardian readership should know this, that, as it were, when you went beyond the chattering classes or anyone remotely resembling it, people loved it. That the more regular the folks you talk to, not to be snooty about it myself and using that phrase, the more awestruck they were. They didn't. I asked them a lot about it. They didn't feel they needed a bit of loving up or joke or something. They were really folded into the solemnity of the occasion. That went for almost everyone I spoke to. There was the one or two people who said that they thought the ending was somehow they didn't use the word arbitrary, abrupt or something like that, which is true, it was. There was, I said this in the piece in The Guardian, there was this extraordinary sense, I thought it was very telling, because I've been following him for so long now, I've heard so many live speeches of his, and one thing that's very telling about Barak is the speed at which he delivers. And he's very considered about his pauses and relaxing into a particular sentence. There was absolutely none of that yesterday. It was all very, not rushed, but it was all very urgent. That famous phrase from Martin Luther King, the fierce urgency of now. Wow, it was really all about that. It was about someone who, you felt the subtext was, this is all very nice, but we've got terrifying things to be getting on with, and I can't be hanging around very long here. There was an extraordinary sense of that, just simply in the speed at which it was delivered.